Dinosaurs went extinct more than 65 million years ago, mostly, but we're still learning more about them all the time. Some paleontologists say we're in a golden age of discovering new dinosaur species. Between growing interest in paleontology and with fossils being found in some parts of the world for the first time, new fossils are giving us a new cast of characters and teaching us how some of them are related to animals living today. We want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the new species scientists are discovering? Are you curious about dinosaurs that might have lived in Wisconsin or nearby? What interests you most about dinosaurs? And do you study or work in paleontology yourself? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Alex Hastings is the Fitzpatrick Chair of Paleontology at the Science Museum of Minnesota. Alex, welcome to Central Time.
Yeah, thank you.
Alex, give us a sense of this this golden age of paleontology. How fast are we finding fossils lately?
Well, we're averaging about a new species a week, and it's been holding at that for several years now. So it's absolutely incredible to be alive at this time and when we're discovering so many new things.
Why are we now discovering so many new species at this rapid pace?
Well, I think the reality is that, you know, there are likely millions and millions of species of dinosaurs throughout the, you know, more than 100 million year history that they had. So there's a lot more to be discovered even still. But I think a large part of it is also a lot more focus now in certain parts of the world that hadn't gotten nearly as much attention from, quote, Western science. And there's also been a big push in a lot of parts of the world to build up their paleontology community. So one of the really big ones is, I would say, Argentina and China have both really invested heavily in their fossil resources. And from that, we've learned a lot.
I know when it comes to, you know, pre-human ancestors, every new discovery means we have to draw new lines in the family tree. I imagine that's got to be going at a huge, fast pace for dinosaurs, right? If we keep adding new members to that family tree.
Oh, it gets complicated. So how we figure out these evolutionary relationships is largely based on kind of details of anatomy that we pull together in a big data set that runs through a computer program. Basically, every time you add another line there, you have to go back and rerun the analysis. So it can be really difficult if you're trying to keep up to date with everything.
Now, is there new technology that's helping us either find more fossils and then once we get them, understand them better?
Yes and no. So in terms of finding where good places to find fossils would be, satellite imagery has come a long way, and just the accessibility of it has allowed people to just kind of start kind of almost shopping, going around Google Earth, being like, oh, this place looks really, really good. Let's see the rock types right. And then, you know, actually going out there and finding it. So it makes that a lot easier to narrow down the search. But then you still have to get out there and actually find these things with your eyeballs. And a lot of that is really the same basic method that's been since paleontology began. But your other part, in terms of kind of once we have them, there have been enormous advances in what we can learn from the dinosaurs that have been discovered or other ancient creatures. One of the really fun and exciting ones is CT technology. This is the same thing as getting a CAT scan in the hospital, and that allows you to look inside the dinosaur bones or whatever it is you're trying to see. Sometimes you even still have something buried in rock that's too delicate to pull out. But with this technology that's really gotten better and better and better over the years, allows you to really start to look at all these tiny little details of all the bone features that you would never be able to see because they're inside the bone itself.
Now, I put in a little disclaimer there. I said dinosaurs went extinct, and then I said mostly, and I'm actually looking out the window, and every now and then I think I see a dinosaur flapping by. What? Dinosaurs aren't really quite extinct?
That's right. So there's actually, about 10,000 species of dinosaurs still alive today. We just call them birds. Yes, birds are basically a subset of dinosaurs. They came directly from the dinosaur line of evolution, so that name actually applies to them. So we can scientifically accurately call all the birds that we see today dinosaurs.
Can we learn things about dinosaurs by looking at birds? About the other dinosaurs by looking at birds.
Right, right, right. The non-bird dinosaurs by looking at birds, absolutely. So it's really fun to look at what kinds of features birds have inherited from their dinosaur ancestors. One of the best ways to see this is particularly looking in the bones of the feet, because they look really, really similar to even things like T-Rex and other kind of two-legged meat-eating dinosaurs that they were very close or pretty closely related to. You can also, like, features of the, like, how they usually have scaly legs and then kind of feathers throughout the rest of the body. And looking at a lot of different features of birds can actually tell us a lot about their extinct dinosaur relatives.
Talking to Alex Hastings, the Fitzpatrick Chair of Paleontology at the Science Museum of Minnesota, talking about why now is in many ways a golden age of dinosaur finding, a new species discovered for years now, pretty much every week. Alex, I know you talk about a lot of different kinds of dinosaurs. Are there particular fossils, dinosaurs or other extinct relatives that have a special place in your heart?
Oh, well, yeah. I have a favorite dinosaur, like many folks do, and it's called Therizinosaurus, which is admittedly one that not many people are familiar with. They're these super weird relatives of the quote, raptors, the, like, velociraptor and from the movies. It was really, really big, had these massive, like, 3-foot-long claws on its hands, had kind of a skinny neck and a relatively small head. And it was mostly a plant eater, but it had these massive giant claws. Seemed to have been mostly for defense, but also possibly for bringing down branches. They could just pull the whole thing down and spend the day munching on the vegetation. And meanwhile, feeling pretty safe because they got these death claws ready to go.
Now, when I was a kid, you know, we learned about the T-Rexes and the Brontosaurus, which was out and back in again. I think it seems like I'd have a lot of learning to do if I wanted to get back into dinosaurs years later.
It's true. There's a lot more names to know, and it's actually really hard to even get a handle on exactly how many recognized species of dinosaurs there are, because a lot of these are still kind of debated as to, you know, does this really qualify as a different species? So it's really hard to even put a number on it. But we're looking at, you know, 700, 900 isn't, you know, an absurd estimate at all.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Mac is with us in Milwaukee. Mac, hello.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on. I was wondering if I could ask Alex, he mentioned Argentina and China and how these countries are discovering so many new dinosaurs. I know that in the United States, discovering dinosaurs or early paleontology was really related to kind of nationalism and the conquering of the West and proving that we were on par with all these other scientific regions, like in Europe in particular. And I was wondering if there's any of that similar, like, political impulse in these countries. Like, is it kind of a way of them proving they're a part of the scientific community, that their kind of national scientific infrastructure is as well developed, or is it more of a communal international effort?
Interesting. That's an interesting question, Max. So is there a dinosaur race kind of like we had the space race?
Yeah, I like getting into geopolitical aspects of paleontology. I think it's a little in between, most likely. So basically you've got there's a lot of value to understanding your own history and not necessarily just kind of exporting your science. So I think especially when, like, a lot of really amazing discoveries were being made in China, initially a lot of these were kind of getting published and going through the records by, you know, institutions outside of the country. And there's a lot of interest in building up the paleontology program, but even more so than it was before, in order to get, you know, people from the area to be able to do this. And I think that has a lot of value because they're much more closely connected to it, literally. And you see that in a few of these places that kind of are starting to really invest in that. I don't know if it's necessarily that they're trying to outcompete other countries or other institutions, but I think there's there's a bit of a better kind of sense of pride and value for the local ancient history.
Mac, thanks a lot for that call. That reminds me, another place that I understand could be fertile ground for dinosaur fossils, if we can figure out how to get them, is Antarctica. Is there a lot of hope there?
There is definitely some hope, for sure. It's there actually are several paleontologists have gone to Antarctica. There's several parts that have been identified to actually have the right kind of rock, the right age to find dinosaurs, and have been a few dinosaurs found in Antarctica. My favorite of all, of course, is Cryolophosaurus, which means basically frozen crested lizard. It's kind of this sort of what looked a bit like an Allosaurus, but had a weird crest going perpendicular, like not along the snout, but kind of across the eyes. It was really cool.
And Antarctica wasn't always Antarctic, right? Because of continental drift, it was not always at the cold part of the planet.
So Antarctica has shifted around just like the other continents. It was connected at one point through like South America and Africa. And kind of going back to the beginning of the age of the dinosaurs, it was a lot easier for these animals to get around because everything was either connected or at least, or, you know, very close to each other. So that really helped dinosaurs have a global dominance. And then as those continents continue to shift around, they, you know, just further and further expanded out into those continents that they can be found on every single continent on Earth.
We're talking to Alex Hastings, the Fitzpatrick Chair of Paleontology at the Science Museum of Minnesota, about what's been a busy time in dinosaur discovery. In recent years, we're finding a new species per week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what paleontologists have been digging up? You're curious about the dinosaurs that might have lived in our neck of the woods? If you have a favorite dinosaur, is there more you've been wanting to learn about it? Call in at 800-642-1234 if you ever worked or volunteered in a fossil dig. Love to hear that story. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about new dinosaur discoveries with Alex Hastings, Fitzpatrick Chair of Paleontology, the Science Museum of Minnesota. You can call in with your dinosaur faves and raves at 800-642-1234 or your questions too. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Racine. Mike, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, I saw a TED Talk and the gentleman was saying the reason there's so many dinosaurs relates to the kind of pride of the founders. These are really juvenile dinosaurs that are like a baby T-Rex that they give a new name to. They could tell from the quality of the bone density that it's a juvenile. I wonder if what your speaker thinks of that theory.
Interesting. So is this a small dinosaur distinct species, or is it a small dinosaur because it's a juvenile of the same species? How do we know that kind of thing, Alex?
Yeah. So you're referring, I'm guessing, to Nanotyrannus, which was kind of argued as a different species related to Tyrannosaurus rex. There's been a ton of debate on this where it's gone kind of back and forth, but I think the science has really settled on Nanotyrannus just being a young T-Rex. There's still a couple of folks that would argue with me, and that's fine. but yeah, you can, especially this is, again, kind of getting into the new technologies here. We can really look into kind of the internal details and start seeing kind of even growth lines and stuff like that, so we can get a sense of how old these individuals are. And sometimes that can reveal that, you know, they weren't small, they were just young and they hadn't grown up yet.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Jeff now in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you. Are you aware of the active mammoth site, the archaeological site in South Dakota? I think it's Hot Springs, South Dakota, not far from Mount Rushmore, that you can visit and your family and children, they unearth these bones. And it's an active site because they're digging deeper and deeper into what was an old like pond or something that over the years, thousands of years, covered over and it became a mound. Are you aware of that active site?
Yeah, of course. I have been there. So Hot Springs, South Dakota, it's the mammoth site. It is absolutely extraordinary. I highly recommend it for anyone who makes their way out towards Rapid City in western South Dakota. They basically identified this, what's essentially a sinkhole that kind of trapped these mammoths over many, many years and built up skeleton after skeleton. And what they did is actually build an entire, essentially a museum and a structure over the site itself. So when go in, you can see them going, you know, carefully level by level. They're clearly envisioning this as a, you know, multi-decade project because it's just enormous. They built, you know, collections facilities, exhibits, all that is right there. So when you go there, you're seeing the very, very authentic process. It's a really, really special place.
Cool. Jeff, thanks for bringing that up at 800-642-1234. We're talking about dinosaurs with paleontologist Alex Hastings from the Science Museum of Minnesota. Let's go to another caller now. William is with us in Milwaukee. William, hi.
Hi there.
What do you want to tell us about William?
I actually wanted to ask your guest a couple of questions in regards to the ankylosaur, the large armored herbivore that was active during the Cretaceous period. I'm just curious, where was its general range in regards of, you know, where it lived and such like that, since I've done some research on it, but I can't really see, picture it in my mind, shall we say, in a modern sort of setting, so any input would be great.
And William, it sounds like you're a fan?
Oh, most certainly. I've studied paleontology ever since I was a kid.
Fantastic. The ankylosaur, Alex.
Yeah, it's absolute iconic dinosaur. If you guys don't know, it's the armored one with the big club on its tail. It does come from the Hell Creek Formation, which is at the very, very end of the Age of the Dinosaurs, which famously puts it alongside T-Rex and Triceratops. It's best exposed in Montana, South Dakota, a little bit into North Dakota, a little bit into Wyoming. And then there's some pretty darn close relatives of ankylosaurs that got up into like Alberta and kind of pushing on into Canada, and some other kind of relatives have gone south as well. But it's specific to ankylosaurs, centered mostly around like Montana.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Burl in Cassville. Burl, hi.
Hi there. Yeah, my question is whether there have been any attempts to clone dinosaurs, and if they have, has it been successful and we just don't know it, or is that not a practical thing to try to do?
Yeah, so the short answer is we have not. And assuming we're actually, they haven't cloned birds really either, but anyway, I assume we're talking about ancient extinct dinosaurs. The biggest problem is DNA really doesn't last very long. By about 500,000 years, it's degraded so much that there's hardly anything there anymore. So when we're talking about dinosaurs being 66 million years old or more, there's really not that genetic material. Now, there has been some interesting work done trying to isolate organic compounds from dinosaur bones. This has been met with a lot of contention. I would say it's far from settled. But there is at least kind of some interesting and potentially promising avenues towards things that are closer to that, but that still really doesn't get anywhere near the DNA that you would actually need to do the cloning process. Then there's the whole aspect of how you actually generate that, and you know, have to develop fake dinosaur eggs and all that other stuff. None of that has been figured out whatsoever. So much as I would love Jurassic Park to be a reality, I do not see it happening in my lifetime.
Bro, thanks for the call. Hey, I should ask, you're in Minnesota, we're here in Wisconsin. What kind of dinosaurs might have lived under our feet here?
Yeah, so we're here on, there's a large seaway covering basically the middle part of North America. And the dinosaurs on the west and the east seem to be pretty different. But we do have dinosaurs on the eastern part of North America. So we're basically on kind of the eastern edge. With Wisconsin, you would have actually been even more kind of land-based, which actually should have been better for finding dinosaurs. However, those darn glaciers had to come through and basically strip away virtually all of the rock. So there's hardly anything there. And that's true for both Minnesota and Wisconsin. Minnesota, we're lucky enough, and this isn't a total spoiler, there's a little bit of this online. We do know we have little bits of a small meat-eating dinosaur and a duck-billed dinosaur. And those are decently well represented if you go down to like Missouri. So it's very likely these things were roaming far and wide. There's been little bits of duck-billed dinosaur in Iowa as well. So these things probably were pretty widespread throughout Minnesota and Wisconsin as well.
Let's take a minute to branch off away from dinosaurs. You helped us to discover the Titan boa, the largest snake we have a record of. Can you just in a minute tell us a little bit about that guy?
Sure. Titanoboa is a relative of boas and anacondas. We We're doing work in northern South America in Colombia in the Cerrejón coal mine. And basically, coal workers had found some of these bones, and then word got around. And eventually, myself and several other researchers got to do some collecting there. And among those ended up being these massive, massive snake bones that come from about 60 million years ago, which puts it relatively soon after the mass extinction of the dinosaur. So dinosaurs are gone, snakes go just absolutely nuts. So it's about 42 feet in length, would have weighed 1.25 tons, and is by far the largest snake ever known throughout all of time.
We have to option the movie on that. Alex, thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
There, thanks for the invite.
Alex Hastings is the Fitzpatrick Chair of Paleontology at the Science Museum of Minnesota. He talked to us today about what we're learning during what some scientists are calling a golden age for discovering new dinosaur species.